Well, today, why you need to be careful with debt consolidation loans. Today, we're going to take a look. Stay tuned for Prudent Money. Good afternoon, this is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. Well, if you got a question for me, I do have a way that you can get some answers just by going to the website at prudentmoney.com. There's two resources available to you. The first one is the Ask Bob section, and that's if it's just a simple question, simple answer, we can usually use that section, use the email, and I'm happy to answer your questions that way. If it is something that's got moving parts, it's a little bit more complicated. Probably makes sense to schedule a phone call. You can do that by going to my calendar. You can see what times are open. Reserve one, and we'll give you a call and talk through your situation and see what the best, maybe the best move is for you. Obviously, there's no cost. There's no obligations. It's just a great way to get information because the truth of the matter is it's harder and harder to find places that you can get information, and we want to make sure that we get you really good, solid information so that you can make better decisions with what God has given you. That's all at the website, www.prudentmoney.com. You know, typically on the Prudent Money Radio Show, we talk about one main topic and use the entire show time to talk about that main topic. And sometimes I like to pull off questions that I get through our mail system, email system, and conversations. One of the reasons I like to get the questions and I like to hear what you're thinking about and grappling with and trying to figure out is the subjects and the different questions that you do have, because that also gives me an idea of what my listeners are going through and what would be appropriate for topics as we go through. So one of the topics that I want to talk about today, and I've been... people really do struggle with this question, and that is, what happens if a relative or a mom or a dad passes away with a lot of debt? And I kind of overheard somebody talking about this exact same subject the other day, and the one individual said to the other, well, you're going to be responsible for that debt. General rule of thumb, and by the way, I'm not an attorney, nor am I trying to play one on the radio, just giving you some general advice. General rule of thumb, if you're, say your mother was, your dad had already passed away, your mother was the only one living, and she passed away, and let's say she owed $30,000 on two or three credit cards, the creditors would then go after the estate. You've got no connection to those credit cards unless you'll say the estate was $100,000 and the will said it divided up between you and your sibling. And you have one sibling, so you're going to take 50-50. So the trustee or the whoever's taking care of the will cuts a check for $50,000. Let's just say they ignored the debt, $50,000 to one and $50 to the other. Technically, as a recipient of the estate, you represent where the debtor, where the debt collector or whomever is trying to collect the debt is going to go to get the money. I would say it's been my experience, and please do not rely on this as a slam dunk happens every time, is that you rarely see someone, a debt collector, go after the estate. But it does happen, and it's something that you have to figure out how to take advantage of. Now, one of the things, of course, that you can do, since you do have estate money, and if it's all locked up in a trust, there's really no way that a debtor can get an understanding of what you do have. You can always negotiate that debt down to much lower terms and pay it off, and then you'll be done with it. So it just depends on what you feel is the best way to do it. I mean, I personally, I think you got to take care of your debts. Now, when I say take care of your debts, I mean take care of debts that you actually owe. One of the problems that ends up happening with debt in general, especially at the point that it's in collections or anything like that, is that it grows, and they just put whatever interest rate on it, and they just add to it whatever amount that they think that makes sense, they want to add to it. And chances are you don't really owe what they say you owe. But it's just it's kind of the sleazy environment of the debt business. So just know that it can come back, and it can come back on you as far as debt collectors trying to get that estate that you just split up. But like I said, it's been my experience. This hasn't been the norm. But I'll tell you this. Generally speaking, when a parent passes away, this debt is all of a sudden discovered. And it's one of these things where the siblings, the adult children, don't have any idea that there is actually debt that your mom owed. So it is generally a surprise. But these are tough conversations that are really, really important to have. And I've, through the years, have given, talked through a lot of adult children on these conversations, what to say, what to do. And the key is to make sure that your parent knows that you're not doing this for any other reason but to make sure that she stays okay and that she doesn't have to deal with anything. I think one of the more disturbing stories that I came across was a daughter was calling me. She said, you know, my mom owes a lot of money, and the debt collectors keep calling, and they threaten her. And she told me that the other day she came in to her mom's house and saw her mom laying on the ground having an anxiety attack over threats and claims that the debt collector could never do in the first place. But I thought to myself, boy, there's just got to, you know, all it takes is information to know that you feel free to hang up on these people and you don't have to deal with it. But you don't ever want to get to that point. And that's why it's good to have a conversation. In fact, I'm a very big advocate for not only having that conversation, but also having a conversation about what the parent is invested in. What kind of risk are they taking? And make sure that there's not going to be any big surprises. Tough conversation to have can be met with a lot of resistance, and it may be that it's just kind of something you talk your parent through over a period of time, and then you get the opportunity to really talk about it. But you know, one of the things you want to have at your disposal is the login information to credit cards, bank accounts, and any investment accounts. And also a good idea to put a security freeze on the three credit reporting agencies. That way, makes it almost impossible for somebody to set up an account in your mom's name and commit identity theft. And that's a really bad thing to have to figure out and find out that's going on. Especially when you're in grief and going through the loss of a parent. So just some things to think about and things that make sense. Let's talk a little bit about gas cards. I had a client call me up. Actually, didn't call me up. He sent me an email. He said, you're never going to believe this. We've been talking about the average balance or interest rate of a credit card is about 22%, 23%, 24%. It depends on what study that you follow. Regardless, anything north of 20 is just absolutely makes no sense whatsoever. But gas cards are a very interesting credit card because they're not really credit cards that people go after. I mean, most people go after the Visas, the American Express, the MasterCards. But they're, you know, if a credit card, if a gasoline company figures out a way to put a good combination of rewards and things that attract you to that card, then you may end up buying it. I mean, you may end up applying for it and using it. I just remember when I was a little boy that my dad always had the Texaco card or the Exxon card and used it religiously. Credit cards were a little bit differently back then than they are today. Today, I would suggest that, you know, gas cards are kind of one of those last alternatives that you can actually get and can be useful in a situation where you have to build credit. And generally speaking, anytime that you have to build credit, you're talking about a lot of times a very, very high interest rate, a lot of fees, a whole lot of fees. And I'll never forget this. This lady sent me an email and said that her son had just applied for a credit card. He's in college. He got the credit card back and hadn't even used it yet. Got the card and the bill, and there was a $500 a credit line, and he'd already owed $300 worth of expenses towards that credit line. They charged him for the overnight. They charged him for the rewards, annual rewards membership. I mean, it's unbelievable the things that they charged him for. And he had $300 racked up before $500 was the amount of the bill. That's why you got to be careful. But this gas card was 34%. This that my client was sent to me, 34%, absolutely outrageous. We will talk about that and more. This is Bob Brooks. Stick around. I'll be right back. Hi, my name is Bob Brooks, host of the Prudent Money Radio Show. So let me ask you a question. Do you know your numbers? Now, which numbers are those? They are your retirement numbers. That set of numbers is the single most important planning numbers you can know. Yet the majority of Americans don't even know them. Prudent Money Financial Services, sponsor of the Prudent Money Radio Show, specializes in figuring out those numbers and creating a game plan to make sure you're on the right track. Listen to the Prudent Money Radio Show weekdays at 3 p.m. on Bible School Radio 91.3.
Hi, I'm Jill Taylor, inviting you to join me each Saturday morning at 11 o'clock for Choose Life Radio. You'll hear people from across America sharing their stories of faith, forgiveness, redemption, and restoration. Choose Life Radio will encourage you to fully appreciate the gift of life. You may also find help for you or a friend in need. So please join me Saturday mornings at 11 o'clock right here on Bible School Radio 91.3.
Dynamic, practical, life-changing.
There's no point in going to church and not letting the Christ who gave birth to the church on the day of Pentecost change your life.
Join us each day as Pastor Paul Shepherd applies the timeless truth of Scripture to everyday life. It's Destined for Victory on this great station.
Weekday afternoons at 3:30 here on Bible School Radio, KDKR.
Welcome back. This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for listening. You know I do appreciate it. Must be Monday. Can't get that out today. We're talking a little bit about gas cards, why you got to be careful. Generally speaking, they do have high expenses. And if you really look at the rewards and the incentives for using it, it doesn't really add up to be something that I think is worth getting a gas card for, because once again, of the enormous interest rates that they charge. This one card that a client called me about the other day was 34%. Unbelievable. And it's not like, I mean, this guy's got impeccable credit. And they've raised his credit card percent to 34%. These cards, though, can, they're dangerous, because you don't want to find yourself in a situation where you've charged up a lot of gas, a lot of trips to the gas station, and you find out that now you've got $2,000 or $3,000 bill, and you're looking at 34, 35% on an interest rate. they can be a great way, even though the expenses could be high. They do make a great alternative for these cars that you'd normally get to build your credit. Once again, to build your credit just comes down to charge a balance on a credit card, pay it off. Charge a balance, positive credit activity is exactly what you do to build good credit. So gas cards, be careful with, but can be used as a way to build credit and a good place to start. Just make sure that you know the rules, you know the details, the fine print, and that you always, always pay on time. This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudence Money Radio Show. Had a real dear friend of mine send me something in. He said he was pulling up his his credit score, and the credit score said, big black letters said, good, congratulations, you have a low debt to income ratio, which means you're making way more income than you are as far as paying the minimum payments and the payments in general to paying off debt. It goes on to say, having a low debt ratio is an indication that you have the ability to handle more debt if needed. This may be an ideal time to consider making major purchases such as a new home, car, or to make those investments or more home improvements you have been considering. And he kind of chuckled in the email and said, if you have a low debt to income ratio, doesn't it make sense to keep it that way? Absolutely. Just because someone sends you a credit card with a zero balance on it doesn't mean you have to go charge it up. And very good thing to remember. So what would it take to bring real estate prices down? Well, of course, as we've talked many, many times, and we've through the past 3 or 4 or 5 years, we've talked and watched the bubble to some degree of the real estate markets grow, and prices go way up. And if you look, inflation hit, and we're still dealing with that level of inflation right now. But you're not looking so much at the boom in the real estate markets as you were looking at. Doesn't mean that activity's not happening. Depends on where you are. Depends on your price point. Depends on a lot of things. But there is a general supply and demand issue where there's not enough supply and there's a lot of demand, which is a seller's market. And so sellers have been raising their prices. But they're met now with a little bit of a situation where buyers are saying, I could buy that when interest rates were 3%, 3.5%. Today it's 7.27, which is today's rate. Don't think I can buy it at that price. So I think that you're starting to see the market lighten up a little bit, loosen. And maybe those prices come down. So what ends up happening is the prices on various houses start to come down, and the price is locked in, it's sold, and that provides a comparative or a comp, and they break that down per square foot of what it costs. And so you compare that to your house, and you they're the house that you want to buy, and you compare to what the individual seller is asking for it. So the comps kind of drive things, and not an inexact science in way of going about it, but it is the preferred way of going about it, I guess. So the tightening of the market needs to be loosened up a little bit, and I think you're starting to see some activity happening that is loosening things up. The other issue, so let me back up. So interest rates, without question. Interest rates come down. You see a totally different market. This is why, one of the reasons why I think the Federal Reserve Board, who controls interest rates for the most part, has to be very careful. Because if they go out there and they start irresponsibly cutting rates. And remember, you only cut rates in the event of an economic problem or the event of an economic slowdown. We got another manufacturing number today that suggests that the economy is strong and is doing fine. And you remember we talked for many, many shows of all the indicators that were saying opposite of that, that the economy was slowing down. And so what is it? You know, is it what the actual indicators are saying, or is it something else? It's a fairy tale. That's what it is. So who actually knows exactly what the real answer is? But the optics say, we'll just leave it at that, that the economy is not slowing down, and there's really no reason why we should be in a situation where they cut rates, because all that will do is fuel a mania in the stock market and a mania in the real estate markets. And when you talk about unaffordable housing, these prices will go up, and then you'll have it if they start aggressively cutting rates, which would make absolutely no sense to me to do that. And this is why I think that Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell is just talking about what he's going to do and then leaving some doubt, kind of engineering a soft landing for the stock market, because the stock market, Wall Street, just wants those interest rate cuts when it doesn't even really need to do so. And, you know, if anything at all, why not keep the interest rates a little bit higher for the balance of this year and into 2025, just to double check and kind of see what's on board with the new president or the remaining president being reelected. What's weird to me, two things just really are interesting to me. I say weird's not a good word. Interesting to me. It's April 1st, which is unbelievable. And my 4-year-old boxer just turned 5. April 1st, always easy to remember. Just thought I'd slide that in. And then you have just in November of this year, which will be here before you know it, you got a major election. But it doesn't really seem like it, does it? Seems like there would be more activity. It just doesn't seem like an election year. Maybe when they get to the conventions, it will seem like that, which I don't think is a bad thing, because it hasn't been going on and on and on and on. And, but it's a very odd year with legal issues and cognitive issues, and you just don't really know what to do with it. Anyway, we'll back off all of that. I think, though, the question is, it's going to be a combination of lower rates. I do believe if we get a situation where interest rates, for whatever reason, and there's a lot of reasons it could cause it, but for whatever reason, go up and over 8%, I think that is a situation where you're going to see the real estate markets really lock up. That's just kind of a psychological effect. They're eclipsing another number that's higher at 8%. So that's want to keep that in mind. Hey, tomorrow going to have Chuck Bentley, CEO of Crown Financial, on the program with me. What a blessing it's been to have someone as knowledgeable about stewardship as he is. And he's going to come on, and we're going to talk about some of these trends, some of these predictions. And we're going to talk about what is the likelihood of them happening, and what kind of time frame are we looking at? What would have to happen in order to see this kind of situation unfold? And I'm looking forward to that visit with him, and he will be on tomorrow. So you want to make sure that you set your watch for 3 o'clock in the afternoon to hear online or in your car, or you can go catch it. We do podcast every program, and you can go catch that show at your leisure, wherever you like to listen to podcasts. So that easy. Actually didn't even get remotely through the list that I have, but we'll talk more about this on Wednesday. This is Bob Brooks. If you got a question for me, please go to the website at prudentbunny.com and send it in, because we are all out of time. Till we do meet again next time, keep the faith and have a great rest of the day.
That's all the time we have for today. Questions or comments for Bob, or to find out more great information like what you've just heard, visit www.prudentmoney.com. Be sure to join Bob Brooks again for the next edition of Prudent Money.